Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhyme record, break neck spines and vertebrae, step on the plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirt bag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like In Vogue. And I'm in season, the season vet. I don't need respect. All I need is a check. Might check.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome once again. Wherever you are, however you are listening, whether it be live with us on this wonderful Thursday night or in podcast version, archive form, welcome to another installment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax, and I am very excited to be with you this and every time I am able to grace the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. And once again, I am happy to say that I am rejoined after a brief hiatus last week by my wonderful producer, Chip Williams. Chip, how are you doing on this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful evening?
I'm good. It's good to be back. I never like missing the show, but life happens sometimes, man, and so, but it's good to be back. It's good to be back talking to you.
Life comes at you fast. There's no doubt about that. And things happen, things come up, not a big deal. Another good example of that tonight is due to some mechanical issues. Our usual guest in the first segment, Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, will not be able to join us. So it'll be Chip and I taking on the Grizzly Bear News segment, and I think that we'll be able to power through, but we will miss Chris in the first segment. Ways to get in touch with the program as you are listening, whether it's on Twitter in the days following the live recording, or if you're listening live right now, like you hopefully are, through the Blog Talk Radio airwaves. You can follow us on Twitter at GBBLive, at GBBLive is our Twitter handle. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. Chip Faulkner's Twitter handle is at Chip Williams, excuse me. I think I just said Chip Faulkner.
You did. It's all good.
Chip Williams' Twitter handle is at Chip Williams Jr. And then Chris Faulkner, although that would have been a mighty, mighty, mighty force if you combined Chip Williams and Chris Faulkner. Chris Faulkner's Twitter handle is Faulkner Memphis, at Faulkner Memphis. Give us all a follow who usually partake in this first segment. Here's the lineup and the rundown for the program this evening. We're going to have our Grizzly Bear News segment in the first part of the show. It'll be Chip and I talking about the site's biggest articles that have come up this week, some other aspects of the site that we'd like to make sure that you check out. Especially, there's a special preview coming up for the Los Angeles Clippers game that Chip in particular will actually give you a rundown preview of. Should be pretty good. It's a musical one, and I'll leave it at that, and I'll let Chip take it from there. So we'll talk about that in the first segment. We'll give the rundown of the Grizzlies' return post-All-Star break. Two great wins on the road at Portland and at Los Angeles against the Clippers, and then a bit of a letdown against the Kings. And, you know, we move on. There's four more games coming up in the next week between GBB Live episodes. In segment two, we're going to have our own Craig Fielder, senior staff writer for GrizzlyBearBlues.com, from across the pond, so to speak, over in merry old Europe. He is going to join us in the second segment. He's going to talk about what it's like to be an NBA fan overseas, his View from the Enemy articles that are a big hit with a lot of folks. It's one of the more popular new parts of the site that we'll talk to him about. And we'll take a deeper look at Nick Calathes with Mr. Fielder in the second segment. Then in the final part of the show, we are rejoined, multiple appearances now for this guy, and we're happy to have him back on. Ben Hogan, at Not the Golfer on Twitter. He is the producer for 92.9 ESPN Memphis's Eric Hasseltine show. We're excited to have him on, and I'm especially excited to talk to him about, you know, every time, you know, around the All-Star break or post-All-Star break, the Memphis Grizzlies start up their, you know, their video series, their episodes that they put on that Fox Sports South, excuse me, And this year, the theme of those is Chasing Greater, it would seem. And the hype video for that came out this past week. And I do emphasize the word hype because it was pretty freaking awesome. I was fired up, and I'm excited to talk to Ben Hogan about that, talk with Chip about that as well, their take on the Chasing Greater campaign. And then we're also going to play some word association with old Ben Hogan, try to get his thoughts, the first thing that comes to mind when he hears the names of Memphis Grizzlies or maybe some 92.9 folks that we've had on the program along the way. So Craig Fielder will join us in segment two. We will have Ben Hogan from 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis in segment three. But first things first, it is myself and Chip Williams with a special installment of Grizzly Bear News. And you know, Chip, the easiest way to get started with this for me, at least as we move on from not being able to have Chris Faulkner on the program with us this week, the best way to start is at the beginning. And you take a look at the way that the Memphis Grizzlies played in their games Sunday night and Monday night at Portland and at Los Angeles, two teams that they are directly competing with for playoff positioning, playoff seeding, potential playoff, first round playoff matchups with a team like the Los Angeles Clippers in particular. And the way that they came out and played in those games, especially defensively, really was inspiring. And it was good in those first two wins to get a feeling like, okay, these Grizzlies are ready to embrace who they are defensively, which has always been their calling card in this grit and grind era. They are going to do the best they can to continue to develop offensively, and they're going to grind out these wins. And they went in on the road in a tough place to play at the Moda Center, lovingly known as the Rose Garden before that. But they go into Portland and they pull out a big win against the Trailblazers, albeit without LaMarcus Aldridge. Then the very next night, second night of a back-to-back, they go into Los Angeles, the Staples Center. They take on the Clippers. They take on full-blown point guard version of Chris Paul, and they find a way to pull out a win at the last second against the Clippers. So those first two wins, let's start with the positive here, Chip. What do you take away from the two wins that the Grizzlies picked up to get to 41-14 before the Sacramento debacle on Wednesday night?
Well, obviously it's two really good wins against two teams that are going to be in the playoffs. And at that, it was on a second night of a back-to-back on the West Coast. You kind of had a lot of things working against you. You know, you've got the time change. And it was a little bit easier maybe coming off the All-Star break, so you were pretty well rested. But it's still, it's going to a different part of the country. It's going to, you know, 2 hours behind you. So your sleep is maybe thrown off a little bit. It's still a back-to-back. It's still two really good teams, and you got wins, and they weren't easy. You had to come back, and you had to fight to get both of the wins. I think the big takeaway out of both of those games, it has to be Nick Kolaitis. You know, he's kind of been coming on here as of late, especially since Vince Carter went down. He's kind of assumed that, quasi-shooting guard role, backup shooting guard role, if you want to call it that. Basically, he and Nick Kolaitis, or he and Ben Oudry are just kind of trotted out there in a two-point guard lineup. And I think it's fair to start calling Kolaitis Klepto Kolaitis, man, because he's I think I saw where he has the most steals per 36 minutes in the NBA, or averages the most steals per 36 minutes in the NBA, something ridiculous. And then Tony Allen is third or fourth. So that bench unit with Tony Allen, Kosta Koufos, and Nick Kolaitis has become an incredibly formidable defensive lineup. They don't have a ton of guys who can just go out there and get buckets, although Bano does a good job of that. Lure at times does a good job of that. But they just don't let teams score flat out. They are really good at just locking teams down with three really, really good defenders in that second unit. So I thought Kolaitis' emergence was kind of a big story. The shooting was a little bit of a concern, even in the wins. Several people pointed out that, you know, it came back to bite you finally in Sacramento, but it wasn't great against Portland or the Clippers. So that was a little bit of a concern. But, yeah, Joe, I mean, I think you have to think that the biggest takeaway was just, man, Kolaitis is back to doing what we know he can do.
And he really has been a shot of life for that bench unit. You know, you look at that grouping and you have a lot of concern because when Coach Dave Yeager goes with his true bench mob, so to speak, the true bench now with Vince Carter out, Although if you go and you, as you listen to the show, if you're checking out grizzlybearblues.com, there is an article up from our own Chris Faulkner about how Vince Carter plans on starting to practice again here soon. So maybe we'll see VC in the next week or so. But if you take a look at what that bench unit is now, it's Beno Udra, it's Nick Kalathis, it's Tony Allen, it's John Luer, and it's Costa Kufos. And Kufos has been phenomenal as well, as has been Tony Allen. All three of them have been amazing. But Nick Kalathis' development and his rise and fall and rise, the ebbs and flows of his stint as a Memphis Grizzly really have been amazing to take in. I mean, think about it. This guy was booed out of the building last year. And right, wrong, indifferent, it brought about a debate on blogs and Twitter and all sorts of places about whether or not it's right to boo your own people. And then Nick Kalathis becomes Western Conference Rookie of the Month once or twice, and people love Nick Kalathis. And then he gets suspended for the Oklahoma City series and another 13 games after that for abusing the substance abuse policy. And Beno Udra takes his job for all intents and purposes. And now Nick Kalathis, who has always been able in the pick and roll to facilitate. He's had a good relationship with Costa Kufos in that way. Offensively, he's a ball-handling, big, versatile guard. Now, a guy who was a good defender last year, using any kind of measurement you want, any advanced analytic, any metric, even your eyes. You sit there and you watch the basketball game, and Nick Kalathis has become a borderline elite defender. And the numbers back that up. It really isn't that much of a stretch at this point to call him that. And that really is a testament to Nick. I fully admit that I was concerned about Nick Kalathis. I remember doing the show over the summer and having questions and comments and concerns about, well, maybe they should let him go if he's not going to be invested, if he's not going to want to be a part of what these Grizzlies are doing, if he's truly unhappy being in Memphis and he wants to go back to Europe and get the big payday. You know, I don't want somebody who is half in the circle, so to speak. 1 foot in, 1 foot out, not truly there. But I'll eat crow on this. He has been a professional for everything that I can see. He's been, when called upon, aggressive. He's played with a great motor, great energy. And he's doing an amazing job within Coach Yeager's schemes of playing passing lanes. He's been a great, great, great defender with his hands, not fouling, attacking, and using those hands to get the ball and create deflections and more possessions for a bench unit that needs as many possessions as possible, if we're being honest with each other, Chip, because they're not going to be dominant offensively, but their ability to create possessions and transition opportunities defensively cancels that out.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And you're not the only one who's had questions about Kalathis. You pointed out it's been just ridiculous, you know, what his career has been like here with the Grizzlies. As you pointed out, I mean, it looked like the first couple of months he was here in Memphis that this guy had no business being on an NBA basketball court. He just didn't. He was booed in his own home arena. And then he completely did a 180, for lack of a better term, and locked down the backup point guard spot, then got suspended, and then just about bolted for Greece, but the Grizzlies wouldn't let him do it. You know, then he had to finish out serving his suspension, and he just, you know, with the play of Beno Udrih this season, he hasn't really had the opportunity until Vince Carter went down to truly get consistent minutes and get into any type of rhythm. Well, now that he's here in that rhythm, I mean, it's great. It's great to watch him back. It's great to see what he's able to do and just kind of that different dimension that he brings to you and the more floor spacing. You know, he's not a great three-point shooter, but he is capable. But with he and Beno on the court at the same time, you now have two ball handlers, two legitimate point guards that can handle the basketball, but they do such different things. It also allows you to have Tony Allen and Nick Kalathis on the wings, so then you can stick Beno Udrih on, you know, whoever the worst a wing scorer is out there. Essentially, you're able to hide him with two almost elite-level defenders there by his side, and then a great rim protector in Costa Kufos. So, you know, there's been talk about whether Jeff Green needs to start or, you know, whether he's more suitable coming off the bench or whether Tony Allen is, you know, going to accept a bench role or he has to start, you know, kind of whatever. But it certainly looks like Tony has played great off the bench. He undeniably has played great off the bench. And Jeff Green's done fine as a starter as well. But, you know, we look at it too. back in that Los Angeles Clippers game, Chris Paul was going absolutely bananas, especially towards the end of the first half. But then Nick Kolaitis came in, and even in the fourth quarter, and did a great job defending him. Courtney Lee did the same as well. Courtney Lee played well defensively in both of those wins. So it's a testament to how this team plays basketball. You know, their offense has improved significantly this year relative to where it has been kind of throughout this whole run of playoff success, the whole, you know, grit and grind era. It's certainly the offense has been a lot better, but they are still, you take it back to what their roots are. You take it back to how they kind of define themselves as a team, tough, grind it out, and play defense. And that's what they've done extremely well the last two wins that they got on the road. So, you know, the shooting's not always going to be there, but you cannot deny the effort. You cannot deny that they are going to play good defense almost on a nightly basis.
And you can – defense can travel, if that makes sense. Defense, you
right.
can play every night. There might be nights you don't have your shot. There might be nights where you struggle offensively, but you can always have the opportunity to defend. And that is something that can be consistent. A lot of it has to do with effort. A lot of it has to do with attention to detail. And the Memphis Grizzlies have shown, as we've talked about during this grit and grind era, that they are very good at paying attention to the detail of defense. You are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I and my producer, Chip Williams, are discussing the Grizzly Bear news of the day. Make sure you're following Chip on Twitter, at Chip Williams Jr. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. Follow the show on Twitter, at GBB Live. Interact with us as we go through this first segment. Also, the chat room is open as you listen to the live program. Please go into the chat. Please talk with us there as well. Happy to have you and talk and conversate about these Memphis Grizzlies. And the game, unfortunately, on Wednesday night, last night, since we're recording this on Thursday, against the Sacramento Kings, a game in which the Memphis Grizzlies never really seemed to get out of the gate fully. They made a nice little run to make it a game. They were in the lead there for a little bit in Sacramento. But give credit to guys like Rudy Gay, who really rose to the challenge against their former team. Rudy had a tremendous game, 28 points, excuse me, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. That's a hell of a line for Rudy Gay. You've got DeMarcus Cousins, who in only 24 minutes because of foul trouble and Zebo trouble, that we'll talk about more here in a moment. Boogie had a good game, 16 points, 6 assists, 9 rebounds. You know, and it the major concern for me coming out of this game, Chip, was the fact that Zach Randolph only had 5 rebounds, which tells me that he either wasn't invested on the glass or he got bodied pretty well on the glass, because you rarely see Zach with that low of a rebounding total. Another concern for me from that game was Mike Conley's performance, who still continues to be hit or miss even out of the All-Star break. 4 for 14, 1 for 4 from 3. He and Courtney Lee combined were 2 for 10. The Grizzlies shot 25% from 3. It's going to be hard for them to win games when Mike Conley is that ineffective and when guys like Ray McCollum basically play him to a draw.
Yeah, and going into the game, you knew that they weren't going to have Darren Collison. So it was setting up for a game where you thought Mike Conley could really play big, could really play a big role and really dominate whoever the Kings decided to trot out their point guard. But I was talking to one of my buddies before the Kings game, and to me it just kind of felt like a loss. It was 3rd and 4 nights. It's on the West Coast. You know you're coming back to Memphis right after that game. You know you're playing the Clippers on Friday. You expended a lot of energy in those back-to-back games coming back to get those wins over really good basketball teams. So, you know, I knew it was going to be a tough one going in. And it looked like at the very beginning, kind of like the Kings were just going to pick it up and run away with it. Credit the Grizzlies for kind of clawing their way back in it. But they just didn't have enough, I don't think, in the tank after 3 and 4 nights on the road to pull it out. So the Zach Randolph thing was a little bit concerning. I think he and Boogie, you know, they banged pretty hard all night. And, you know, that being, you know, the end of that road trip, I think Zach may have just run out of gas because he ran into a guy that will sit there and bang with him just like Zach does. So the outside shooting was horrendous. Courtney Lee, I think, and Mike Conley were 1 for 10 from three-point range. As you pointed out, Conley, not a good shooting night at all. And it's getting to this point, Joe, where it seems like any time Courtney Lee has a good game or can even just score in double digits and hit a couple of threes, the Grizzlies are going to win that game. I'd be interested to see a stat where it pointed out if Courtney Lee made two threes and scored double digits, what the Grizzlies' record is. Because I guarantee you it's very good, because he's kind of the wild card in terms of what production are you going to get out of that two-guard spot. You kind of know what you're going to get from Jeff Green. You think you know what you're going to get out of Zach, Mike, and Mark and the bench. It's what production is Courtney Lee going to give you that night? And I think kind of as he goes, the team goes, to an extent at least.
Absolutely. And, you know, our loyal listener, Grizzly Bear Blues writer, did a great job for the I Love Memphis post recently. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. Reason to get back on that Grizzly bandwagon. Adam Rubrum. And forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, Adam. I know you've given me a hard time in the past. But Adam just tweeted us, Chip, and said his concern with the Sacramento game was Marc Gasol. Nothing went through him, especially late. Coach Dave Yeager held him out too long in the fourth quarter. And that is an interesting point. Probably goes back to the energy being expended. It was the third game in four nights, as you referred to. They knew they were coming back to Memphis soon. But at the same time, you know, you got an all-star player in Marc Gasol. He was an MVP candidate earlier in the year. That has certainly quieted out a little bit. But you would imagine, at the very least, here's a guy who's going to be all-NBA first or second team. Your team goes through him at this point, yet he wasn't the emphasis nearly enough as the game went on, and especially in those latter moments when it got out of their hands in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and Yeager's rotations that whole night, they were just kind of weird. It was kind of a weird game from that standpoint. You know, Yeager, as good as I think he's been in terms of turning the offense around, he's become now legendary, it seems like, for his out-of-timeout plays. One thing that has been kind of strange is the way he works his rotations. You know, it seems like for the most part, it's the same guys playing. It's not like he jumps around to, but you know, when he had Quincy Pondexter, you never knew if Quincy was going to play or not. You know, so he'd go two or three games without playing, and then all of a sudden he'd be playing 15, 16 minutes for a couple of games. So it's not necessarily that. It's just when he brings guys in and when he subs guys out. There's not a whole lot of just consistency there, I think. So that was kind of – and that certainly was very evident in that Sacramento game. I think to Adam's point, you know, he's talking about waiting to he held Gasol out too long in the fourth, and that kind of, you know, negated any chance for a run that the Grizzlies were going to try to make. And I think that that's just to the point that Yeager is going to continue to grow as a coach. You know, he's still a young NBA coach. This is only his second season, and he's improved leaps and bounds, in my opinion, from his first season to his second. And he'll continue to get better, but you still see those inconsistencies or those areas that he can improve, especially in games like last night.
Again, this is the Grizzly Bear News segment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I'm talking with Chip Williams, my producer, as we fill in for Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, who is not able to be with us this evening for this Grizzly Bear News segment. Here's some articles that you can check out as you are listening to the podcast. We just kind of gave you a rundown of the week that was for the Memphis Grizzlies. Chris does a good job every week posting the weekly playoff standings, and we'll hit on that a little bit more later on in the show with the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day, as teams like Oklahoma City continue to make it look like it's unbelievable to think about that they could achieve that 7 or 6 seed if they stay on this red-hot streak that they've been on playing-wise, even without Kevin Durant. So we'll talk about the standings later, but every week Chris Faulkner posts those. Give those a check or a look. Chris also posted today, try your hand at recapping a Grizzlies game at GBB. This weekend, we have a couple of games coming up, and Chris wants to give our readers and our listeners to the show, in fact, an opportunity if they want to try and recap a game for us here at the site. So go ahead and check that out on the site if you're interested in being a part of recapping a game for Grizzly Bear Blues. My article this week, I try to do one every week. Not perfect, but I do my best. Mine this week talked about the renaissance of Zach Randolph, which in hindsight was probably a little bit too much like Tayshaun Assance, but that's all right. The renaissance of Zach Randolph in terms of a title, and Chip did a piece on that, so that's what I'm referring to there. But the renaissance of Zach Randolph, I take a look at Zach as a passer. Since 2015 started, he's really done a better job passing out of the post and out of the high post and moving the ball around for his teammates. And in the past, he's had a history of being looked at as a black hole. So trying to defeat that perception is reality kind of idea. And then also Zach as a defender, really remarkable statistic that I found in my research for that piece. Zach Randolph from last season to this season has improved 9.5%. At least the shooting of his opponent has gone down 9.5% from three. So that tells me that to some extent, at least, Zach Randolph is having better effort defending the three-point line. He's doing better against stretch fours than he has in the past. And if you watch the tape, and I use some clips in the article, he has. You know, he has been better at least contesting those jumpers and making guys earn it from three. So Zach Randolph, I compare him to John Wayne and Denzel Washington from Training Day in that article. So give that a read if you haven't checked it out yet. A fan post this week that was posted by Heart Doll was a love letter to Costa Kufos. That's a good article as well, pretty entertaining to read. It's posted on the main site as of right now, as of this recording. And then the last one, and we'll talk about this before we get into our first guest, Craig Fielder here, Chip. This was more last week than this week, but we didn't really have a chance to talk about it. I think it was last Friday that it was posted. And Jonah Jordan, one of our new, well, he's not new anymore, he's been around, but one of our younger, I don't know. He's newer than me, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But Jonah comes out and he writes kind of a bombshell, definitely a hot take, an outside of the box thought. The Grizzlies, you know, after 10-day contracts are up, if they don't re-sign Jamichael Green, they're going to have an open roster spot. Grizzlies could use some outside shooting. They could use another wing who can score from range. He brought up the name of Elena Delladone of the WNBA. And there were plenty of hot takes to be had about this article, some folks that were not exactly ready for that line of thinking. Chip, just kind of wanted to get your feel for the idea of a WNBA player, so a woman, a female, playing in the National Basketball Association against male athletes. Do you think she could do it?
Look, here's what I'll say. If it was going to ever happen, I think that Jonah probably picked the perfect female to do it. Someone who's 6'4", 6'5", and is just a dead-on three-point shooter. I do not ever foresee someone like a Brittany Griner, who is considered, you know, a post player with not really any kind of three-point or floor-stretching ability, ever being able to break into the league simply because I just don't know if physically she would be able to hold up. But someone like Adela Don, who has the size of kind of a traditional two guard in the NBA, if that was ever going to happen, that's the type of player it would be. Now, I don't know whether that should even be considered seriously, but if you're just talking about having her as, like, you know, the 15th player on the roster who maybe could, you know, shoot a situational three, you know, that's not crazy, right? I mean, that's not out of the question, I guess. But in terms of, like, a girl ever being a true rotation player in the NBA, I'll never speak in absolutes, really. I don't think that speaking in absolutes is a good thing because you can be proven wrong very easily. So I won't say that it could never happen, but I would be kind of shocked if it ever did. Someone maybe on the bench, like I said, it doesn't play a lot, but, you know, Joe, I think that there is just so much of a disparity in terms of athleticism and strength, and there's just a lot of things working against them. Now, look, listen, if I went out and I played one-on-one with Elena Delladone to 11, she'd beat me 11 to nothing. I'm certainly not taking anything away from her. But if I went out and played with LeBron James or something, I would probably never touch the ball. Like, it is just a different, you know, you look at LeBron James and a female and someone trying to guard her, or even just a Jeff Green, who's just kind of a pretty average starting link. There's just such a big disparity there in terms of the ceiling that he can reach as an athlete and, as you know, in his strength, and what a player like Elena Delladone. So if it was ever going to happen, I think a player like her would be the one to do it, but I don't know that it ever will happen. I guess that's probably my take on it.
I mean, I think that's a fair one, but at the same time, and I've told Jonah this, You know, I went into that article when I first saw that it was tweeted out right before I read it. I think I retweeted it because I thought, well, this will be interesting. I thought, absolutely not. Hell no, this is crazy. I'm not sure what Jonah is thinking here. But I read it, and he didn't change my mind. I think I just more so agree with you, Chip, in that speaking in the absolute I don't think is fair. And if there was someone who could do it, it would be someone with the skill set of Adela Dawn, because of her ability to shoot the basketball from three, because of her ability to score on the perimeter. You know, driving to the lane probably wouldn't be as successful for her, and that's understandable. There's a physicality difference, and although that physicality gap is closing, you look at a Brittany Griner, and although in terms of, you know, physical girth, she wouldn't be able to handle it in the post, you know, length and just overall size. You know, the ability to dunk for women, you know, that's not something that should be overlooked. That physicality gap is slowly but surely closing. Will it ever be to the point where a woman can body a man in an NBA game? I'm not sure. I'm really not. And that's okay. Like you said, that doesn't diminish them as basketball players, because they are certainly excellent, excellent basketball players. It's just a different kind of competition, and it doesn't make any better or worse. I truly believe that. It's just different. So I'm with you on that. But I compliment Jonah because he was able to think outside of the box, and I really thought that it was an interesting take on the matter. And it's a situation, you know, you look at the San Antonio Spurs bringing in the first full-time assistant coach from the WNBA. You know, with that 15th roster spot, if it's going to be a D-League guy rotating in and out and he's just practicing and he's not going to see a ton of run on a veteran team, if you think a locker room can handle it, it's not crazy to think that it could happen someday. But it's probably a bit of a stretch at this moment in time. And probably, I think I said on Twitter at the time, I don't think we'll see it in my generation, but it's something that could happen down the road because of the way that the game is changing. And if a woman is in a place to, you know, and these were questions that were brought up either on the site or on Facebook, you know, obviously different sized balls, basketballs, I should say, almost had a Deflategate moment there, different sized basketballs, or, you know, obviously different distances from the rim in terms of the 3-point line. If a woman's able to make those adjustments and, you know, over time, I'm sure they can, there's potential there. I really do think there is. So I think Jonah's onto something. He might be a little bit ahead of his time there. I'm not sure. I'm with you, Chip. I don't think that women will ever be able to be full rotation players in the NBA because of the physicality of the game, but there could be roster spots there, and I think that they could hold their own in those 14th or 15th person on the bench kind of situations. You are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm your host, Joe Mullinax. Chip Williams and I, my producer, Chip Williams, we just finished the Grizzly Bear News segment. I thought we did pretty well, Chip. Obviously, we're no Chris Faulkner, but, you know, we gave a rundown of the site. We gave a week in review, and we hit the hottest take of the week. So I think we kind of nailed that one.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, there's no replacing Chris Faulkner, but I think Chris Faulkner, we did all right.
You know, as long as we did Chris proud, that's what matters. Before we move into the next segment, I want to remind you that you can get in touch with the show on Twitter at GBB Live. I also want to remind you that the chat room is open. So if you're listening to the live program and you want to talk through the chat, maybe you don't have a Twitter, maybe you are like me and you're very frustrated with Twitter right now and you just kind of want to talk in the chat, that's fine too. Log into the chat, talk there, happy to interact with you. Please do so. I also want to make sure that I tell you guys about a great deal with Audible.com, powered by Amazon.com. It is a tremendous provider of audiobook downloads, over 150,000 titles to choose from, fiction, nonfiction, everything in between. If you have a long trip coming up, maybe you're going on a nice vacation to get out of the cold that it seems like a lot of the country is in, from Memphis to the East Coast, download a book, get to a beach, listen to something brought to you by Audible.com. You can download it, put it on MP3, CD, put it in the cloud. However you take on your music or your digital downloads, you can do it through Audible. And if you sign up for audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues using that URL, once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues, not only will you get an audiobook download after you sign up, not only will you become a member of audible.com, you will also help through the through your membership, us here at Grizzly Bear Blues Live, as we prepare to make our donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, a cause in Memphis, Tennessee that is near and dear to our hearts. Children who are facing life-threatening ailments in their families come to St. Jude every day, every week, every month, every year to try to get treatment for those diseases. And as those kids and families go through the doors of St. Jude, they do not have to pay a cent for their treatment or their lodging. That is tremendous. It also is not free. Just because they're not paying doesn't mean that it doesn't cost money. So through the generous donations of others, through fundraising, St. Jude makes those things happen for those kids. We want to be a part of that process. So once again, www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Sign up, get yourself a great, great, great service through audible.com, which is powered by Amazon, and help us support an even better cause here at Grizzly Bear Blues Live, or help us support St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and make a donation through Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Our next guest on the program this evening, he is a Grizzly Bear Blues staff writer, senior staff writer. He has been a great addition to the staff this season. He has done a great job with his view from the enemy post that have given him an opportunity to be on local Memphis radio, Cerrito Live on Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis. And, you know, he's got a dreamy accent, I hear, Chip Williams, that we're about to experience ourselves. Really excited to have this guy on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Craig Fielder. Craig, how are you doing today or tonight or whatever time it is where you are?
I'm great, thank you. It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Woo, 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, Craig, for those folks that aren't as familiar with your story, if you could just give them a brief rundown of where you're calling us from and how in the world did you become a blogger at Grizzly Bear Blues?
I'm from the north of England. I'd always been a fan of basketball. And then I met my wife in 2007, and she was a big fan of Elvis, and she wanted to visit Memphis. So I've just started taking more of an interest in the Grizzlies, and it's just grown from there. And then I'd been a reader of Grizzly Bear Blues, and I saw Chris's advertisement on the page asking for writers, so I just got in touch with him, and we just took it from there, and then just started doing a bit of work for you.
I have to say, the accent is fantastic. It really is. And Chip, you can weigh in here, too. I'm pretty excited about this. Craig, a really, really remarkable accent there. And you said you're from the north of England. What part in particular?
I'm from Sheffield originally, but I now live in Newcastle, where my wife comes from.
That's awesome. I mean, so Chip, do you have any questions before we get into the outline? I'm pretty excited about this. Technology's phenomenal.
No, this is great. First of all, I watch a lot of English Premier League soccer, so this is kind of crazy. I feel like I need to talk. Every time I hear an English accent, I immediately think soccer. So, Craig, just very quickly, I'm a Chelsea fan. Are we going to hang on to the Premier League title?
I think they've got it wrapped up already. There's no stopping them.
My man. All right. All you, Joe. That's all I needed to hear.
I like it. No stopping them. That's good. So Craig, getting back to basketball, you said you became a basketball fan. You're a big fan of the Grizzlies after your visit to Memphis and then Graceland, which it seems like it's almost necessary as you come to Memphis. You need to visit the house that Elvis built. Just kind of getting a feel for, as a Grizzlies fan and a blogger overseas, how much does Europe dig the NBA? Are they really that into it when they come overseas and they come to Europe? What is the buzz like for NBA action over in Europe?
Honestly, I think in England, there's not really much interest in it. But if you go to other places in Europe, I think they're a lot more interested in the basketball because they seem to have a lot more players in the NBA than we've got English players over there. I think that's probably why it's not really ever took off in England. I mean, we've got a few fans over here, but they seem to support all your big market teams or basically just wherever LeBron James is playing at, which is a bit of a shame, really. But
That makes sense. I mean, you look at China and other areas, obviously Europe and China very far apart, but in terms of, you know, the American sports going to foreign countries, it's the superstars that really kind of power it and take it over because there is no homegrown attachment to a team. Nobody really grew up with anybody or anything like that. You really just kind of gravitate towards the stars.
Yeah. But that's what basically got me into it, because when I was growing up, we're obviously in Michael Jordan era. So we were watching Michael Jordan and more or less following the Bulls. But then I just became more of a fan of basketball rather than a particular team. And then it was when I met my wife, I started following Memphis more, because I just saw that as an opportunity to finally come and see a live game. And it's just took off from then. I'm just a massive fan now, and my life just revolves around Memphis basketball, really.
Well, that's fantastic, and we're very excited to have you on the site, and we'll talk more about the articles that you've done for the site here in a moment. But, you know, Michael Jordan certainly brought a generation of fans around the world into the game, and like you said, now it's LeBron James. It really is becoming more and more an international game. Once again, we're talking to Craig Fielder from across the pond, so to speak. I've always wanted to say that. Over in Newcastle, England right now, he is Grizzly Bear Blues, or one of the GrizzlyBearBlues.com senior staff writers. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, @Craig_Fielder. And Craig, you know, one of the great pieces that you've done for the site that really has brought a lot of attention, and we mentioned that you were on a local radio show here in Memphis this past week, I think, doing a spot with Kevin Cerrito on Kevin Cerrito Live. Just kind of your view from the enemy, which if you would, and again, hopefully people have checked it out if they've already listened to the show. We talked about it on the show in the past. But maybe just give folks a rundown of what it is you do with View from the Enemy. Where do you find this stuff?
What after games, I would look through the opposition's fans forums to see what they were saying about the Grizzlies' performances. And it was just a bit of a pain that you would have to search through tons and tons of pages just to find a few comments. And the reason I started putting them into an article for readers to look through is because it would have been so much better if you didn't have to look through comments that you didn't want to read, so to speak. So you can just get straight to the bits where the opposition's fans are talking about Memphis rather than, for example, the Sacramento fans. We don't want to read what they think about their own team, just the Grizzlies. And I basically, to get the in-game views, I'll take them all from one site, which is usually Real GM or the SB Nation sites, and then I'll search through maybe another 4 or 5 forums to get a lowdown on just 100, however many different comments I can find, and pick the best ones out from maybe 4 or 5 different forums.
Well, and you do a great job streamlining it. I was going to mention that myself, so I'm glad you did. The idea of you don't want to sift through all of the stuff about, you know, people loving Reggie Evans for using the Sacramento game. You know, Memphis Grizzlies fans despise Reggie Evans. They hate his beard and his headband, and they just think he's a terrible guy. So nobody really wants to read about him. But they do want to read about how they look at Zach Randolph or how they think Rudy Gay maybe is fitting in because of the history between Memphis and Rudy. So those streamlined kind of ideas are really, really nice to have, and you do a great job finding those thoughts. And you also do a good job, and I wanted to compliment you on this, Craig. You know, you do a good – this article could very easily become a, you know, make fun of the other fan base. Because, and sometimes, you know, they deserve to be made fun of for some of the things they say, just like, you know, sometimes Memphis' fan base deserves to be made fun of for some of the things they say. But you have a good balance of crazy versus logical in terms of the comments that you put up on the site. I just wanted to get your thought real quick. Do you think maybe it's 50-50 as you go through all these forums, crazy compared to logical? Are there more crazies out there than logical thinkers in these forums as they watch games?
I think a lot will depend on the result, really. I mean, fortunately, we've not had to deal with many losses this season, but when we have, the fans are obviously a lot more fair about the Grizzlies than when we win. And then we'll start to get the comments about how we've only won the game because of the refs. We're fouling all the time. We're a lucky team. We're not going to win because the roster's not good enough. But then on the other hand, when we get beat, you'll sometimes see that, oh, we've beat a fantastic team in the Grizzlies. So I think a lot depends on the result, really.
Talking with Craig Fielder. Follow him on Twitter @Craig_Fielder. Fielder. I am, of course, Chip Williams, the producer of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I'm joined, as always, by the host, Joe Mullinex. Craig, earlier in the show, Joe and I were talking about Jonah's article and what he wrote last week about the Grizzlies possibly looking at maybe signing Elena Delle Donne, who is probably – she's one of the best WNBA players, but she's certainly the best in terms of someone that could possibly or conceivably ever make a transition into the NBA. Do you ever see a point in time where a WNBA player could play in the NBA?
Personally, I would like to see it happen, but I don't think it ever will. I mean, just because of the pure fact, you've got guys there that are playing basketball that are 7 foot tall, 300 pounds. If they're going to be running out to attempt to block her shot, they're going to just absolutely flatten her. And I don't think, no offence, but I don't think that women could handle the physicality of coming up against 7 foot players that just weigh a lot more than what she will. You know, so if they're going out and blocking a shot or they're going up challenging for rebounds, she's just going to get absolutely ripped to bits. And I don't think it's... I'd like to see it, but I don't think it's ever going to happen in reality just because of the physical side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way that Joe and I kind of looked at it is that, look, it's not that players like Elena Deladon are not good basketball players, but she's a great basketball player. And look, Craig, you and I could play her two-on-one, and she'd kill us both, right? Like, she's a great basketball player. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just different, though. These guys, like Jeff Green is just, you know, he's a pretty average size, I guess, small forward in the NBA, and he's just huge, especially compared to any female. So I think you're spot on with that point there. And I want to ask you this, too, Craig, before I turn it back over to Joe. The Grizzlies got a couple of good wins the other night or a couple of nights ago where they beat the Portland Trail Blazers and then turned right around and beat the Los Angeles Clippers. We were kind of talking about Nick Calathes. He really kind of has resurged ever since Vince Carter went down, and he really played well the last couple of games. What were your takeaway from those two games, and what have you thought about Nick Calathes?
I think he's been absolutely fantastic, and what I will say about Nick is I'm surprised it took him this long since his return from suspension to get back into the rotation, because I'm a big fan of his, and I thought that as soon as his suspension were up that he would become the backup point guard and that Benno would have dropped down to be like the third string point guard. I'm surprised it's took this long for him to get his spot back in the rotation. I mean, his defence has just been absolutely fantastic the last few games, and I think it's a shame that he's probably not going to be here next season, because I think you need players like that on the roster. And I think as well, if they could keep him, they could potentially replace Tony Allen when Tony decides to pack in, just for his sheer presence on the defensive end.
He really has been remarkable. You're exactly right about that, Craig. Once again, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Our guest at this time is Craig Fielder, senior staff writer for GrizzlyBearBlues.com, joining us from across the pond over in England. Our producer, Chip Williams Jr., just finished up that great segment there with Craig in terms of talking about Nick Calathes and his impact, especially defensively. And the versatility, Craig, of Nick Calathes really is something to behold. And it's so valuable, and after asking around and doing a little bit of research, you know, the Grizzlies, if they're willing, could keep Nick Calathes another year for a little more than $1 million. They have that option, and you look at this team and the way that he's playing, yeah, they're going to be a little bit cash-strapped. They might think they need that extra million to put Marc Gasol over the edge, maybe, but you also would think, you know, that probably won't happen. So Nick Calathes is a guy that if they have any feasible way to hold on to him because of his versatility, his ability to defend both point guards and shooting guards, and small forwards because he's 6'6", he can probably defend maybe not all of them, but depending on the matchup, he can defend all three of those wing and guard positions. He is so versatile and so good with the basketball in his hands that he's a guy that they should – do the best they can to hold on to him. Don't you agree?
If they can keep him for $1 million, they've got to do it, because we're not going to be able to replace him for $1 million, are we, to be fair? There's not going to be nobody out there as good as him and as versatile as him who we're going to be able to get for the same amount of money.
He's
I think he's got the potential to become a starter one day. Maybe that won't be for the Grizzlies because obviously how deep the roster is at the minute. But if he does decide to stay in the NBA, I think he does have the potential to become a starter at some point down the line.
I think I agree with that. He really does have that ability and that talent to be able to do it. Looking at some tweets that we're getting from folks as they listen to the show here, Craig, Adam at A. Rubrum says you have a very dreamy accent, so your accent is being complimented. We have Matt Bishop at TA is my homeboy. He's been waiting all week to hear you talk. He's going to have to listen to the show in the morning. But he's not able to listen live, but he's excited. You're bringing in listeners to the podcast because of that accent. I like it. And just getting back to the basketball end of things, Adam tweets in again and referencing the Deladone conversation. It'd be possible if they're a three-point specialist. You can look at athletic players like Steve Novak. You know, and that's a fair point. Guys like that, you know, maybe Deladone can give a run in one-on-one because of their inability to move. It would just be interesting to see. You would still maybe think a man, and I don't, it's just tough to really think, but in that role, I really do believe that in that role, 14th, 15th person on the bench comes in, spot up shooter. I think they could do it. And then, Tricity tweets us, Nick Calathes needs the max. She wants Nick to get a max contract. I don't know if he's done quite well enough for that, but he's certainly been valuable to say the least. Now, Craig, every week on the blog, on the GBB Live Twitter account, I tweet out a question of the day. And this week, I really thought I had a good one. I thought I really had come to grips with a good idea. And it ties in to Chris Faulkner's weekly playoff standings that he posts. You can take a look at it on the site right now if you're listening to the show. It's on the blog as we speak, the front of the front page. It's the weekly playoff standings, and you take a look at it, the Memphis Grizzlies still pretty solidly entrenched in the number two seed. They're four games behind the Warriors as of this program. The Warriors and the Cavaliers are playing as of right now, so that might change with this game tonight. Houston is 2.5 games back, so Houston's kind of looking at the Grizzlies from a little bit of afar. Then you got Portland, you got Dallas, you got the Clippers, you got San Antonio, and you've got OKC, who don't look now, is only two games behind the Spurs for that seven seed. So there is a possibility that the Grizzlies, as a two seed, could see the Oklahoma City Thunder or San Antonio Spurs. So my question of the day was a would you rather, Craig. Would you rather win the Southwest Division, which the Memphis Grizzlies have never done, guarantee yourself possibly as a two seed, two first-round home court advantages at least, assuming that the Warriors get the one, and you have to face the Spurs or the Warriors, or excuse me, the Spurs or the Thunder, or would you rather drop out from the divisional conversation but fall into a place where you don't have to play San Antonio or Oklahoma City in the first round? Here's some responses we've gotten before I get your and Chip's takes on the matter. Common denominator at E.T. Norrell tweeted us and said, win the division, we don't have any banders. Richard Blount Jr. at Richard Blount Jr. said, win, we ain't scared. So he supports winning the division as well. Matt Bishop at TA is my homeboy says it doesn't matter. There is no weak team in the Western Conference, so any first round matchup will be fraught with peril. I like that word, fraught. Adam Rubrum tweets in and says, it would be a huge achievement to win the division. Tanking suggests we are scared, and with home court, we shouldn't be scared of anyone. Austin Reynolds at Reynolds Rant tweets and says, home court advantage in as many rounds as possible is more important than a first-round matchup. And then we also had a couple more responses. Grizz Tony says, bring them on, respect the Grizz. So he is a fan of the Southwest Division winning. And then No More Mud at _, yep, I said it, _, he tweets in, and he's not a fan of the Grizzlies' offensive stylings, of course. He says they should avoid both OKC and San Antonio for as long as possible. So a couple of folks think maybe they should drop back a little bit. The majority say win the division. Craig, I'll start with you. Would you rather win the Southwest Division and go into a first-round matchup against the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder, or would you rather drop to a 3 or 4 seed, perhaps losing the Southwest crown to, say, the Houston Rockets, but you're avoiding San Antonio and Oklahoma City?
I want to win the division and get the two seed. I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to have to play these superior teams anyway, aren't we? Well, they're not superior to us, but obviously they are good teams. So you're going to have to beat them at some point anyway, so you're better off getting the home court advantage for as many rounds as possible. And in an ideal world, I would like San Antonio to finish seventh and us to get the two seed, because I think we could beat them in the seven-game series. And then I want OKC to finish with an eight seed, and obviously Golden State are going to get the one seed, because I think that Oklahoma could beat Golden State, and then hopefully that would give us home court advantage all the way through, because obviously then we could end up playing Oklahoma in the conference finals.
No, you're exactly right. Oklahoma City Thunder, I mean, they have to be considered the favorite in as the way they're playing right now. If they cool off or drop out a little bit, you know, then the story changes a little bit. But the way they're playing, if OKC makes the eighth seed and that's where they stay, and they're playing the one seed Warriors, you're going to see a lot of people picking the eighth seed in that situation because of the way the Thunder are playing. And that's even without Kevin Durant the past few games, because Russell Westbrook has just been on another planet. To me, the perfect situation would be if the Grizzlies held on to that two, won the Southwest Division, which they've never done. So it's nice to hang a banner, as other people have said. You want to have that banner hanging. Obviously, the biggest banner would be the NBA championship. But getting that Southwest Division win would be great, having home court advantage for as many rounds as possible. And then if the Thunder could somehow stay in that eight seed and then San Antonio move up, which doesn't look like that's probably going to happen at this point because of the way that they've been playing lately on their rodeo road trip. This is the worst rodeo road trip they've ever had. But, you know, at the same time, maybe it could invert and you have the Spurs drop down to the eight seed to play the Warriors if they keep playing as poorly as they have. Maybe the Clippers cool off and drop to the 7. OKC gets up to the 6, and you don't have to worry about seeing the Thunder until the second round, and you still get to see the Clippers. So there's still an opportunity and a chance for the Grizzlies to maybe avoid these teams. But I agree with you, Craig, and I agree with most of the tweeters of the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day. I'm with you. I think that, you know, you want that division and you want home court as much as you possibly can have it. Chip Williams, I'll bring you back in now. What do you think? Would you rather win the division, have to see Oklahoma City or San Antonio in the first round, two teams who the Grizzlies have had trouble with in the past, clearly, or would you rather them drop the division, drop down to maybe the 3 and 4 seed, and avoid OKC and San Antonio until later rounds?
I think you just win as many games as you can, and you take what you get. At some point, you'll have to beat you're going to have to beat really good teams to get to the NBA Finals or even the conference finals, regardless of who you play in the first round. At some point, you're going to have to beat really good teams. So I don't think it matters. It seems like just this year, just about everyone in the Western Conference is a really good team. Now, obviously, some are better than others. Some give the Grizzlies more trouble than others. But I think you just if you can get the one seed or solidify the two seed, you absolutely do it. And, I just don't think you could even ask a player, hey, don't go out and win this game so that we can try to get a more favorable first-round matchup. Like, I don't even know if that's really a conversation that goes on within teams. It's probably us fabricating it more than anything else. I think that regardless of what we think, I think they're going to go try to win as many games as possible and go try to chase down Golden State to get that one seed.
That certainly would be a perfect situation, even if it involves playing OKC as the 8. You know, the regular season success of having that way to say, you know, we're the number one seed in the hellacious Western Conference, that really has to stand for something. So I agree, and I'm with you, Chip. I think that we as bloggers, fans, writers, whoever we are, watching these games and taking in the content, you know, we think a lot more about those matchups than perhaps even the players do within the moment. The Grizzlies are just concerned about finishing as good as they can, or as well as they can, I should say. And they're just going out and trying to play every game and win every game. They're not thinking about, oh, man, we have to lose tonight. I'm with you on that. These guys are competitors. They've been competitors their entire lives, basically, through, you know, AAU all the way up through the ranks now to the NBA with everything in between. It's hard to turn that off. So if they lose, they lose. That's fine. I mean, the Grizzlies will be in the Western Conference playoffs, barring some collapse of historic proportions. But you want them to be in a home court advantage situation because they are and they have one of the best home courts in the NBA at this point. When the grindhouse is rocking come playoff time, it's a hell of a place to play. So that certainly is a commitment that the Grizzlies need to make to continue to play well and continue to try to, continue to try to get to that number one seed. And even if they don't catch the number one seed, they'll at least achieve more than likely the two or at worst the three, depending on how hot Houston is coming on in these next couple of games. Craig, we'll get you out of here on this. What is, if I ever come to Newcastle, England, okay, so if I ever go across the pond and I ever, you know, come to England, what is something that I absolutely have to eat when I'm there? What is the best of the best food that you can recommend for me if I'm coming over to England?
I think you'll have to come for some Yorkshire puddings because that's where I'm from originally. I don't know if you've ever heard of them in America. It's like pancake mix but cooked in the oven.
Yes, I have had Yorkshire pudding, and it's delicious, and I think that it would be even better at a place that produces such a remarkable accent and a place that, you know, gives us a great blogger. We're excited to have you on the site, Craig, and it was really great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we look forward to your review from The Enemy and every other piece that you do moving forward for the site.
Thank you.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Craig Fielder. Follow him on Twitter at Craig_Fielder. And it really is awesome to have that international flair at this point with the blog, having guys from Canada and then obviously Craig from England, you know, really does give a feel. And it really drives home the point, Chip, that basketball is becoming an international game and it's becoming appreciated, you know, maybe more than any other American sport. You can argue for baseball, especially in Latin America and Japan. But basketball really is becoming a truly worldly game, and you can see it in fans and in players as you look through the association.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And you can see that. I think that's very evident every time that, you know, you get one of those world championship basketballs or the Olympics, anything like that. You know, the USA, for the most part, wins gold every time, but the gap closes, it seems like, every year. And different teams surprise you. You know, obviously Spain's great, but some of these Serbian countries are good. France has got good players. You know, it's just kind of starting to spread throughout throughout the world. Basketball is an international game, and it's there you go. Craig Fielder is evidence of that. A very intelligent Grizzlies fan and a very intelligent Grizzlies writer. And, you know, I was trying to think. I don't even know that there's a British player playing in the NBA right now. I certainly can't think of one off the top of my head. But, yeah, I think that if a Britain player were to ever, you know, break into the NBA, that might spike the interest a little bit more because it seems like Craig was kind of saying that there's just not a whole lot of interest around the country in the NBA. But I don't know, Jody, can you think of anyone from Britain that plays in the league right now?
Not off the top of my head. And if anybody out there that's listening either live or on the podcast can maybe tweet in and let us know. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. I'm sure there have been in the past, but just at this moment, thinking about somebody currently in the league, probably not, unless somebody out there has a better idea and can kind of let us know. But off the top of my head, no, I can't think of anybody. Maybe Ben Hogan can, and we'll ask him here in a moment. But before we get to Ben, I want to make sure I give another shout-out to Audible.com, our great sponsor. Make sure you're signing up for www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get an audiobook download. You can choose from over 150,000 titles. Put it on MP3 form and use it however you see fit. Fiction, nonfiction, biography, everything in between. Once again, sign up using www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get an audiobook download. Get a membership to the site powered by Amazon.com and help us here at Grizzly Bear Blues Live make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get a great service for yourself and help out an even better cause. Our final guest this evening is a frequent guest here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. You know, we've had a run of 92.9 ESPN guest, Chip, but he was the first. Ben was, and we're very thankful to him for that. We're happy to have him back on. He is the producer of the Eric Hasseltine Show on 92.9 FM ESPN in Memphis, Tennessee. He's a good guy. Very happy to have him back. As I said before, this is Ben Hogan. Ben, I hope you were able to catch that segment there a little bit and got to hear that awesome accent from our own Craig Fielder.
Yes, I did. And I did a little research. I found Joel Freeland for the Portland Trailblazers.
Yes! Dang it. I appreciate the research. Joel Freeland.
No
shout
problem.
Out to Joel Freeland.
But it's a little like Joel Freeland, he's not bringing any fans from Europe. They don't care about Joel Freeland. They need someone real.
No doubt.
So, but I appreciate the research for sure, and now I feel much better because I was going to do the same thing once the show was over. I try to, you know, I've got lots of things going on over here. I couldn't research it right at the moment, but now thank you, Ben. Joel Freeland, Great Britain, excellent. So we got that taken care of. I can stop worrying about that in my head. We can look to the week that was with our guest at this time, Ben Hogan. Follow him on Twitter at NotTheGolfer. He is the producer of 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis's Eric Hasseltine show. The Grizzlies are back, finally. They had the longest break of anybody in the NBA. I believe it was 11 days to be exact. And they come back. They have two great wins in a back-to-back set against the Portland Trailblazers and the Los Angeles Clippers in their buildings. Heck yes, fantastic. They look like they're playing the best defense of the season. Nick Calathes, Tony Allen, and Kosta Koufos are monsters. The Grizzlies are rocking and rolling. Then Sacramento happens. And aside from a nice stretch in the third quarter where they get back into the game, it just seemed discombobulated. And the Grizzlies were not quite there fully. And the Kings ran away from them and pull out a win at the Sleep Train Arena in Sacramento. So the Grizzlies come back to Memphis, thankfully, to play the Clippers. And we'll take a look at that at the end of our segment. But let's talk about the week that was here, Ben. What are some positives and negatives of the last three games? I try to start off on the right foot. Let's start with positives. What are some positive takeaways from this 2-1 stretch for the Grizzlies immediately after the All-Star break?
Well, the obvious is they picked up two wins against two teams in which they're battling in playoff contention for in the Portland Trailblazers and Los Angeles Clippers. And then another obvious is he's been talked about for a while, Nick Calathes, the defense from Nick Calathes. He doesn't impress in the box score. If you're just catching the box score, you're like, well, why are people talking about him? You watch the game and you realize he's a difference maker. Him and Tony Allen out there together just wreak havoc on other teams' offense. And it was just amazing to see how far Nick Calathes has come from pretty much the middle of the year last year to what he is now. It seems like his game has transformed into a guy that was questioned if he was even a backup point guard in the NBA or even an NBA player into one of the guys that, you know, we have three legit point guards now.
Absolutely. Between Beno Udrih and Nick Calathes and Mike Conley, it enables Dave Joerger to play those multiple point guard looks. And you've even seen him flirt with at times the three guard look, a la the Phoenix Suns before they imploded with Goran Dragic. And it really is a nice thing to have Nick Calathes, that versatility. That's kind of been a theme of the show tonight. Nick Calathes and that versatility, the ability to defend multiple positions, the ability to be a ball handler and a slasher off the ball. He really does bring a level of competency to that bench unit without Vince Carter that if you're not going to have the floor spacing in terms of traditional shooting, you got to create it in other means. And Nick Calathes is able to do that for stretches. Not consistently, unfortunately. The offense still goes cold too often. But it's good to see with those multiple ball handlers between him and Beno, the ability to give defenses different looks on different times down the court.
Exactly. And I'm not sure when Vince Carter's coming back. I know it's hopefully in the next couple of weeks. But I think when you add Vince Carter to that bench in which you have Tony Allen, you have, you know, Calathes, you have Beno, you have Lure, you have Koufos. But I think they might look to Vince Carter a little bit more to do some scoring because Calathes and Tony, they're going to be relied upon to gamble sometimes, try to get those steals. They're able to get points off those by forcing turnovers and getting easy layups. But when they get into a set, when it's five guys on the bench, they're not getting a lot of points out of that.
No, they're not. They really aren't. And it's something that needs to continue to be watched. You know, you hear the cries for Jeff Green, go to the bench and try to be that scorer for that bench unit. And we can talk a little bit more of that here in a moment if you want. But it's the idea of how well they're playing defensively, that Tony Allen, Nick Calathes, Kosta Koufos grouping. You know, that bench group is playing better defensively than the starters even, and that really is impressive. Before we move on to the negatives of this segment, I do want to cover we kind of dropped the ball on this a little bit, and I'm not saying you did, Ben, because you did research for us. You brought up Joel Freeland from Scotland. But Craig tweeted us as we were having this conversation, and he said Ben Gordon is from England, which I honestly had no idea that Ben Gordon was from England. That's pretty crazy. And then Lou Aldang is a English citizen as well. So you got Lou Aldang, Ben Gordon, and Joel Freeland. Now we have three that we know for sure that come to us from the United Kingdom, Ben.
Okay, well, I did see that Lou Aldang, but from Sudan, and I didn't really know. I mean, it's like,
right.
So, but Ben Gordon,
I think that was a citizenship thing.
Yeah. That's and Ben Gordon. Looking at it, he was born in London, so I didn't even know that. To be straight up honest with you,
I didn't know it either.
Joel Freeland. So,
yeah, no, you brought one to the table. I brought zero, so I'm not judging. No, we've gone from zero to three, so maybe we'll have a few more tweeted in. So thanks to Craig, and thanks to Ben, obviously, for bringing up Joel Freeland. So we talked about the positives. Nick Calathes has been the major thing that has jumped out at us in these first three games back from the playoff or from the All-Star break. Got to go negative now. What are some things that maybe have you a little bit concerned, maybe not for the long run, but just in this three-game stretch, maybe some things that were negatives coming out of these three games?
Well, it's not just this three games. So I know you said not in the long run, but it's something that needs to be looked at. It's the inconsistency of Courtney Lee. He played well against Portland, and then against Sacramento, he went 1 of 6 from three-point, and you know, if you have him knocking down a couple threes there, they're remaining in the game, and it's close coming down the stretch, and it seems like the way the Grizzlies have been playing this year, they're able to pull out those close games down the stretch. Could have given them a chance to maybe go 3-0 on that West Coast road trip, and unfortunately they were not able to do so. And I can't say that it's completely his fault on why they lost. And it's just, you know, shooting woes last night, and I really can't blame them because, you know, it's the third game of a three-game West Coast road trip, and we get greedy now with how good the Grizzlies are. We get really greedy because we want them to go 3-0. We expect them to go 3-0. If they beat the Blazers and Clippers, you're like, oh, we're going to take care of the Sacramento Kings, and they don't do it. But I really think that Courtney Lee has got to get more consistent if the Grizzlies are really going to contend for the title.
He is a key piece, and especially with Jeff Green starting, you know, I've been one of the loudest probably and most targeted lovers of Jeff Green in terms of his fit with this team and the best that they could have done given what was out there on the market. But Jeff Green is not a jump shooter, and he's not a guy who should, you know, there was a period of time in this stretch of games where he had the same amount of shots as Mark, Zach, and Mike Conley combined. That's not ideal, and that shouldn't happen. I don't like Jeff Green as a first or second best player on a team. I think he's a good fit as your fourth or fifth best. Courtney Lee is the key. I agree with that completely because of his ability to space the floor through shooting from range. If he's not doing that, if he's not being aggressive, if he's not taking advantage of defenders overly pursuing him as a shooter and taking the ball to the rack, getting to the free throw line because he's a good free throw shooter too, you know, that's going to really hurt these Grizzlies. They need Courtney Lee to be that aggressive scorer of the basketball when he has the opportunity. That doesn't mean that he takes away multiple shots from Conley, Gasol, and Randolph. It just means that when he does get his opportunities, there was a time in the Sacramento game that he pump faked and didn't shoot it, and he hesitates, and then he pulls the trigger, and you rarely see those shots go in. He needs to pull the trigger the first time.
Yeah, and that was the same thing with Wayne Ellington when he was here. He's become more aggressive now. He's with the Lakers. I think it's because he's expected to do more, but that's the reason the Grizzlies got rid of Wayne Ellington is because he was hesitant on pulling the trigger. And Courtney Lee, I think, is a better player than Wayne Ellington. But if Courtney Lee's out there and he's not being aggressive and he's not making a shot, why is he out there? Put Tony Allen in. He'll give you better defensive numbers anyway, and he'll give you the same thing on the offensive end that Courtney's giving you at the time.
No, you're exactly right about that. It really is a situation where you look at that, and this can kind of transition to the question I was referencing earlier. You know, Jeff Green continues to have detractors, maybe not as many or as loudly as before, but you know, the Jeff Green experiment and the relationship there, for most part outside of Memphis and outside of the fan base, seems like most people see it as a good move. There is a minority, a vocal minority, that still sees it as a net negative, giving up that first-round pick, not thinking that Jeff Green, you know, is worth what they gave up, or, you know, a very good basketball player in general. Ben, what's your take on that matter in regards to Jeff Green? Do you think he's better off the bench? Do you like him as a starter? As the fourth or fifth best player on the roster, I guess I'm struggling seeing the viewpoint of him being a net negative when he's playing within himself and allowing those other guys in front of him to take the lead, and he takes what is given to him. He doesn't always do that, and that's a fair critique, but it's a situation where Jeff really, I feel like he's getting not the most fair shake from some.
I've never understood since they traded for him why people felt like it was a bad move. I was for the Jeff Green trade from the get-go, and about him starting, he played well when he came off the bench at the get-go, and I was wondering how the bench play of with Tony Allen, where they were going to get scoring from. If Beno continues to not really score much off the bench, you may need to look at having him, maybe moving Jeff Green back to the bench if you're going to need that bench scoring. But if you're going to rely, if you're going to be playing Calathes as many minutes as Beno night in and night out, you're probably going to have to move. You're going to have to get some type of scoring off the bench, because there are going to be teams out there. The Clippers bench is depleted because Blake Griffin's out. They already had a short bench as it was to begin with, so you're able to do that against them. But teams with deeper benches, you're not going to be able to do that with. The Oklahoma City Thunder really improved their bench over the trade deadline, and it'll be interesting to see how the Grizzlies bench will go with Oklahoma City's bench, because I don't think that the Grizzlies necessarily have the firepower to go against Oklahoma City's bench now.
Talking with Ben Hogan here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Follow him on Twitter at NotTheGolfer. Ben, I want to ask you about this video that came out a few days ago. It's called Chasing Greater, and it was a video that the Grizzlies PR team or their their entertainment team, they do a fantastic job releasing these kind of hype videos, and this may be the best one yet. Just first off, what'd you think about the video? Because it definitely it did the job on me. I was pretty hyped after I saw it.
Oh yeah, I watched it, and it's one of those things that you're like, all right, let's go. You know,
right.
we're gonna do it. You know, it does get you hyped up, and I thought they did a great job on it. You know, mixing in some Pete Pranica calls with the players and all that stuff. And I don't know if you've seen the Mike Conley one that they just released as well. He's talking about it, and it just shows everybody's focused. Everybody has the same goal, and they're thinking about June. Every one of them is. You know, they're not just trying to make it to the playoffs. They're not just trying to make it to the next round. They're trying to make it as far as this franchise has ever gone, and I love that.
Yeah, I do too, but I mean, they were pretty bold in it. They said that the season ends in June. Are you cool with them saying that? I mean, it seems like you are, but that's a bold statement, because it could come back to backfire, or at least a little bit, if you get one of those unfavorable matchups with, OKC or San Antonio, end up getting bounced in the first round. I mean, I think personally, I kind of like them stepping out a little bit and saying, look, this is what we're playing for. We're playing to get into June. What do you think about that?
I like it. I mean, if you don't believe you're going to make it to June, you're never going to make it to June. And it's just one of those things that, you know, if you feel like you're a true championship contender, then that's what makes a championship team. You have to believe you're going to be there. And going out there and saying, hey, we're going to do it, we'll be there in June, I think that just elevates them that much. They have the confidence in doing it. And I'm sure everybody had to sign off on it. I mean, they're not going to put something out there if one of the guys thinks that uncomfortable saying, hey, I don't think we need to do that. So, you know, I think that it was a good move. I think now is the time to do it if they're going to do it. and I love it.
Well, let me get your thoughts on this then. They've struggled, at least they struggled the last couple of games on the West Coast road trip. Although they finished 2-1, they struggled with their shooting, and especially in the Sacramento game. Does that concern you at all as they, you know, kind of gear up for the playoffs? Yeah, you know, they've got 20-plus games to play, but you're kind of starting to hit this home stretch where you figure out who you are as a team heading into the playoffs. Does shooting concern you at all right now?
A little bit, but not too much. I mean, I'm comfortable with it. I do think that Courtney Lee has got to find his shot again. He was shooting lights out at the beginning of the season, and now he's just inconsistent. As I mentioned, he shot great against Portland. Seemed like he was getting back into that rhythm, and then last night he went 1-for-6 from three-point land. But the thing is, it's the Grizzlies. It's the Grizzlies style play. They're not running gun. They're not out-shoot you from the perimeter. They're pounded inside, wear you down, and, you know, they're going to be standing at the end of the game, whereas the other teams are holding their head down and trying to catch a breath because the Grizzlies have been beating them up for 48 minutes.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. That was my producer, Chip Williams, talking with our guest at this time, Ben Hogan of 92.9 FM, ESPN Memphis's Eric Hasseltine Show. He's the producer of that program. Follow him on Twitter at Not the Golfer. I still say one of the best Twitter handles out there. Excellent stuff. And some excellent points on the Chasing Greater hype video, which I'm with you guys. It got me, it got me pretty darn hyped. And it's a situation where I agree with you, Ben, in that why hide it? You know, that is the goal. This team has been together for multiple years now. The window is closing. Jeff Calkins, we've had him on the show recently, and he talked about appreciating the special season because it's not going to be like this always. You know, this run of grit and grind success is going to come to an end at some point, and we might very well be, and I wrote an article about this, this is a crescendo. This is the apex, more than likely. This is the best it's going to be. So enjoy it, and there's no shame in coming out and saying, hey, this is the year. We're going to come out, and we're going to take it, and we're going to do our damnedest to get to June. So I'm all for it. I'm with you on that, Ben. So now let's get to a game I like that most people like to call word association. All right. I want to ask you about some general Grizzlies thoughts, Grizzlies players, and then I'll sprinkle in some 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis personality names as well, Ben. And I understand you have to be PC and all that stuff, which is totally fine. But I just want to, play a little word association, get what the first, let's go sentence to make it a little bit easier. First sentence that comes to your mind when you hear the following Grizzlies players or 92.9 personalities. Are you ready, Ben Hogan?
Sure, let's do it.
Zach Randolph.
Cornerstone of the franchise.
Very good, I like that. How about Marc Gasol?
Best center in the NBA.
Mike Conley?
Underrated point guard. I think he's always going to be underrated.
Chris Vernon?
I'm trying to – let me think real quick.
That's fine.
No. It's nothing bad. It's nothing bad. National talent on a local level.
Oh, that's very good. I think I agree with that. Absolutely. He and Roser do a great job of that show for sure. All right, back to the Grizzlies. Let's talk about Nick Kolathis.
Has come a long way in a short time.
John Lewis.
Need more from him.
John Roser.
Known Roger for a long time, so great at his job and a better dude off the air.
This is really nice, Chip. I'm telling you what, I'm not sure a Grizzly Bear Blues word association game would be this kind, Chip Williams. What do you think?
No, I think that we probably wouldn't hold any punches back. Not that Ben is, but I don't think we would, certainly.
No, I'm impressed. Ben is taking the high road, and I'm sure, like you said, with Chris and Roser and all those guys, there's no other road probably to take. So that's great. I'm glad you guys are in that spot.
That's I interned with them when I was in college,
mm-hmm.
So they kind of helped me get my foot in the door in the Memphis market, and you know, they've been great.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've had them both on as guests in the past few weeks, and they are, you know, very good with their time, and they've been great with us, so I agree with that completely. Dave Yeager.
I think he's going to have a really long coaching career.
How about Jordan Adams?
2 years away.
Jeff Cobb.
From being a starter.
2 years
Jeff
from being
Coughlin.
A starter. Okay. Jeff Cobb.
Yeah, I think Jordan Adams 2 years away from being a starter in the NBA. Jeff Calkins, very honest, holds no punches.
Chris Harrington.
One of the best basketball minds in Memphis.
Jeff Green.
Missing piece to a championship squad.
And then finally, we'll get you out of here on Vince Carter, on word association at least. Vince Carter, last one.
Carter, let's see here. We'll be better when he returns.
All right, I think I agree with that. I'm a big Vince Carter guy, and I really do believe I would joke on Twitter to jokingly tweet out, you know, let's just put him in a hyperbaric chamber and bring him back in April. I think that obviously the foot became an issue, but this also gives a chance for, you know, the other lingering injuries, the ankle that he had surgery on. Hopefully he has a chance to heal up during this stretch. So I'm with you. I think Vince is going to be a big piece to that puzzle. Once again, we're wrapping up here with Ben Hogan from 92.9 FM ESPN Memphis' Eric Hasseltine Show. He's the producer of that program. Follow him on Twitter, at NotTheGolfer. And Ben, between now, this recording, Thursday night, and the next show, which will be next Thursday night, March 5th, we've got four games on the docket for the Memphis Grizzlies. They've got the Los Angeles Clippers Friday night in the Grindhouse, and unfortunately, they're not doing the flip-flops Friday night. I know there's a lot of people that were disappointed in the flip-flop for the Los Angeles Floppers, but you know, they'll be able to get the voucher and they can go and get the flip-flops later. Maybe we can talk about the flip-flops here in a moment. But they got the Clippers on Friday night. Then they have Minnesota Saturday night at Minnesota. They have to go play the Kevin Garnetts, basically, and you know, that love fest is still very strong. So they're going to have a lot of energy in Minnesota on Saturday night, and the Grizzlies lost to the Timberwolves the last time they were there, February 6th. Then Tuesday night, they have another home game against the Utah Jazz, and then it's another back-to-back. That's kind of the story of March. They've got Houston at Houston on March 4th. So four games between now and the next airing of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. What are some keys for those four games, Ben, and how do you see the Grizzlies doing in that stretch?
The biggest key is don't look ahead. It's going to be easy to look ahead when you're in back-to-backs. I don't expect them to look ahead of the Clippers, but I do expect them, there's a possibility, Jazz coming into town, to look ahead to that Houston game, because that Houston game is going to be key for playoff positioning. And I think that's one of the main things that they got to make sure that they don't do, is look ahead over that Utah game and to the Houston game, because that could end up being a trap game. They need to go 3-1 if they want to hold pace and keep a top two spot in the West, because there's not much room to breathe, really. I mean, they're 2.5 games up on Houston right now, 4 games up on Portland, so they're not really in danger of falling to that 4 spot. And, you know, it might be beneficial, and now looking at it, to fall to the 3 spot, but, you know, you want to get as good of a spot as you can. Really, the 2-3 doesn't matter except who you're going to play in the first round, because, you know, the 2-3 is playing the second round. And I just think they don't need to get ahead of themselves. That's the main key for them.
The playoffs are still a long ways away. They've got a lot of ball to play between now and the end
right.
of the regular season in the middle of April. And you look at the schedule coming up in this next week, and I've made the point in the past, and I said this on Twitter last night after the Kings game, if you're going to go 2-1 on that 3-game West Coast road trip and the game you lose is the Sacramento Kings, that's almost preferable, because you're not losing
right.
about worrying about losing tiebreakers to Portland or Los Angeles. Same thing here. You beat the Clippers, let's say. You beat Houston, which would be great considering that Houston's the team closest to the Grizzlies for the 2 seed right now. Say you beat Minnesota at Minnesota to, you know, get revenge for the last loss to the Timberwolves. What I mean, it wouldn't be ideal to lose to the Utah Jazz at home, But to be honest with you, that might be the biggest preference if you're going to drop one, is to that team who really isn't going to impact you in terms of seeding, and you're not losing any tiebreakers.
Right. I just don't think they need to look ahead, because I don't know what that does to – I mean, they've lost games they shouldn't have. They've lost to Minnesota. They've lost to Sacramento. They've lost to Utah this season. You know, New Orleans was the thorn in their side last year, and they – Utah could be that team this year. I mean, if it comes down to you had to pick one game to lose, yes, Utah would be that one, even though it's at home and no one really wants to see that again. It would be the most preferable one to lose, but I just think – if they drop one of the first two, they don't need to look ahead. They don't need to drop either of the other two.
No, you're absolutely right. I agree with that completely, Ben. And I think you're exactly right that you don't want to see it again from Utah, because the Grizzlies lost to Utah at home December 22nd. So you don't want to lose to Utah twice in one season in your place. But, you know, just kind of looking and getting a feel for the lay of the land in the West. It's interesting to have that debate. And I'll get you out of here on this, Ben. Our Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day this week talked about, would you rather win the Southwest Division and play Oklahoma City or San Antonio in the first round, you know, two teams the Grizzlies have struggled with in the past. Would you rather do that, or would you rather drop to maybe the 3 and the 4? Houston gets in front of you, theoretically speaking. You are no longer the Southwest Division champion, but you avoid OKC and San Antonio until later rounds. Do you have a preference on that? Most people would rather have the division championship.
Yeah, I want that banner.
Yeah, I think that can be that short and sweet. I agree with that completely. I think that you go and you play, and, you know, the Grizzlies, when they're at their best, go ahead.
If you're gonna make it to the finals, you're going to have to play three really, really good teams. Possibly three really, really great teams in the Western Conference. It's so loaded that there's really no easy road to the finals. So you get that first banner, and then you worry about the second one down the road.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I'm with you on that, Ben Hogan. And as always, Ben, thank you so much for joining us this evening, and we're definitely going to have you on in the future to keep talking Grizzlies. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate it, guys. No problem. Had a good time.
All right, once again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Ben Hogan. Follow him on Twitter at NotTheGolfer. He is the producer of 92.9 ESPN Memphis's Eric Hasseltine Show. Great program. You know, they do a great job at 92.9. We've been fortunate to have multiple guests, Chris Vernon, John Roser, Jeff Calkins, Chris Harrington. You know, we've been able to develop a good opportunity to have those guys on, and Ben really was the first one that came on and gave us some time. So we appreciate Ben. He's a great guest. And thanks to him for joining us, as always. Wrapping up here on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, I am your host, Joe Mullinax, joined by my producer, Chip Williams. And Chip, you know, this week coming up for these Grizzlies, the Clippers, the Timberwolves, the Jazz, the Rockets, it's not going to be an easy one. It's filled with back-to-backs, just like March is in general. What are some things that you think are important for these Grizzlies to get a winning record out of this next stretch of four games?
Well, I think one thing is something that we've kind of talked a little bit about throughout the show is just Courtney Lee. He's got to be that guy that goes out and spaces the floor, but he's got to make his shots. Like, he's going to space the floor. He's just got to make the teams pay for going down and doubling Zach or playing off of a pick and roll where they try to, you know, dump down and double on Mark, where Mark and Zach can just kick it out really easily to Courtney Lee, who's getting – he got good looks. He just didn't make them for the most part. So he's got to play well. You know, Mike Conley, he's got to get a little more consistency. But other than that, I mean, there's not a whole lot of things that the Grizzlies are not doing well right now. That second unit has really been good. They've really kind of got me excited for what's going ahead forward. I really like those three guys of Tony, Calathes, and Costa Kufos off the bench. I mean, that defense is just fantastic. You lose nothing from the starters to the bench and maybe even improve a little bit on the defensive side. You'd love to see John Lewis step up and really solidify that backup four spot, because I think that's the one final lingering question of this Grizzlies season is, what do you do with the final roster spot, that 15th roster spot that's currently manned by Jamichael Green on the 10-day contract? But B, if you don't sign Green for the rest of the year, do you go out and do you try to find some
forward to take a John Lewis spot, essentially. If you go out and you try to find someone that can spell Zach Randolph 10 to 13 minutes in the playoffs, because right now, look, I love John Lewis, but right now I don't think you should feel very comfortable going into the playoffs with John Lewis as your backup four. So we'll see if something happens there. But we're kind of nitpicking here because the Grizzlies are 41-15, 15-4 since the Jeff Green acquisition. They're playing some really good basketball, and there's just a few things they need to improve upon. But they're here to stay in terms of contender status throughout the season, barring some, you know, unforeseen, unfortunate event.
And they're becoming more and more of a trendy pick for the team to come out of the Western Conference from national media types. I saw Mike Greenberg tweet that out from ESPN's Mike and Mike. Bill Simmons has talked about that on the Chris Vernon Show in recent days. So it really is interesting to see the national media and attention really starting to be paid more and more to these Grizzlies. And it's something that this area and this roster is not necessarily used to. Very much an underdog franchise, you know, going all the way back to the beginnings in Memphis and people not sure if they're going to stay in Memphis and just the lack of attention and being a small market. It really is a situation where the Memphis Grizzlies are, you know, starting to become a team that is reaching elite status and they're expected to win. Like Ben said, you know, we're starting to get spoiled as fans. It's a chance to really sit back and say, you know what? They're having a remarkable dominant season as compared to the rest of the history of the franchise, and it needs to be appreciated for that. And I think it is starting to be more and more amongst the fans. So it was great having Ben on. Some great points there from Chip as well, looking ahead to the games coming up. I think 3-1 should be the goal. Obviously, beating the Clippers is always wonderful at home. Beating Houston at Houston would be big, and then pick up one of the two between Minnesota and Utah. And they're both back-to-backs, and it's going to be a challenging schedule for the Grizzlies, and we'll talk more about that as we go through the show in March. Next week's show, Thursday, March 5th, we're excited about this program. Guest list is already starting to fill up. Peter Edmiston of the Commercial Appeal and Sports 56 WHBQ in Memphis is going to be one of our guests on that program. We're excited to have Peter on, so make sure you're tuning in next week. We'll talk Nick Calathes some more, I'm sure. He just put out a wonderful article today about Calathes and his numbers game that he does for the Commercial Appeal. So make sure that you're tuning back in next week to listen to Pete. Make sure that you're signing up for audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get yourself a wonderful audiobook download membership and help us support St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis. Make sure that you're listening to the podcast version of the show, which obviously you're doing now if you're listening to the live program. But also keep in mind, if you miss something, if you really like the Craig Fielder segment, you want to listen to his dreamy accent some more, maybe you want to catch Ben Hogan again, maybe you really liked how Chip and I did Grizzly Bear News this week, you want to re-listen to the show, make sure you're listening to the podcast later on. That link will be tweeted out. And then also, I always post on Fridays a Grizzly Bear Blues live recap on the site, grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're checking that out as well. Before I wrap up for the night, I want to give a special shout-out to a guy who asked for a shout-out on Grizzly Bear Blues Live, and he's a guy who always, you know, is giving good or having good conversation with me, and, he asked for the shout-out for Grizzly Bear Blues Live. So Tyrus Thomas at Ty Deltham, thanks for listening. Appreciate the conversation, and hopefully we'll keep you around and you keep listening to the show. So thanks for listening and tuning in. Thanks to all of you for listening and tuning in, of course, as well. We greatly appreciate it here at Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Thank you to Chris Faulkner, who wasn't able to join us tonight, but thank you to him. Thank you to my producer, Chip Williams. Thank you to Craig Fielder and Ben Hogan for being great guests this evening. And most importantly, thank you for listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I will be back next week, as will Chip. We look forward to talking with Peter about the Grizzlies. Hopefully we're talking about another winning run of games between shows. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. I am Joe Mullinax, your host, and this has been Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Grind forth, Grizz Nation.